bottom of Tsadi Zion Ahmed Bey's 11 lines from the bottom. So we'll just give a little bit of background because this is kind of in the middle of a discussion. So the Mishnah, a little bit before this, was discussing a scenario of a woman who either wanted to sell all or part of her ksuba, or she wanted to mortgage it off as a collateral, or she wanted to give it as a gift to someone. So the question basically was, is she able to sell all of it or part of it? Does she have to do it in Beis Din or outside of Beis Din? And the Gemara wanted to claim in the previous few lines that the Mishnah was reflecting the opinion of Reb Shimon because there's a machlokes. If a woman tries to sell or mortgage or whatever, or give her ksuba as a gift, so there's a machlokes. So according to the Tanakhama, the halacha is that once she tries to sell off her ksuba, she forfeits her right to mizonos. But Reb Shimon says, no, that just because she sells part of her ksuba, she still has an attachment to the family, and therefore she would still be entitled to collect mizonos from the estate of the late husband. So now the Gemara questions Reb Shimon's position. Lememra de Rabbi Shimon Savar, de lo amrina miktas kesef kechol kesef, virabaran savre amrina miktas kesef kechol kesef, ha'ipcha shaminan lu. So the Gemara says, how can you make the argument that Reb Shimon's the one who says that part of the sale is not considered like the full thing, meaning to say, just because the wife sold part of her ksuba, that doesn't mean that she's now severed her ties to her late husband's estate. She's still entitled to mizonos, whereas the Rabbanan disagree. The Gemara says that, if anything, there's a brice that seems to indicate the opposite. Disanya, v'hu isha viv suleha, prat levogeres shakalub suleha divir Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar v'Rab Shimon machshir bivogeres. So there's a machlokes, how to interpret a pasuk in Parshas Emor. The Torah says that a Kohen Gadol must marry a besula. So the question is, what about a girl who's a bogeres? Once a girl hits the age of 12 and a half, she may physically be a besula, she may never have engaged in relations, but the question is, once she hits the age of physical maturity, do we assume that her hymen, that the lining on her hymen has started to wear away? So according to Reb Meir, in halacha, we treat a bogeres as if she's no longer a besula. It's as if her besulim are wearing out, but according to Rabbi Elazar and Shimon, that's not the case. As long as she has not engaged in relations, even if she's a bogeres, we still treat her like a besula. So the Gemara says, doesn't this indicate the fact that Reb Shimon says that a girl is a bogeres, we still view her besulim as being intact, you can still marry the Kohen Gadol, so presumably just because part of the besulim have worn off, that doesn't mean that her besulim have fully worn off. So doesn't that contradict Reb Shimon's position over here, that when part of the ksuba has been sold, that's the same as if the whole thing has been sold? So the Gemara says no. Hasam b'krayi pligei. Reb Meir savar, besula afilu miktas besulim, besuleha ad ika kulu besulim, bivsuleha b'chedarka in shelo kedarka lo, Rabbi Elazar v'Reb Shimon savarei, Besula shleima mashma, besuleha afilu miktas besulim, bivsuleha shehu kol besuleha kayamim, bein v'chedarka bein shelo kedarka. The Gemara says that these two cases have nothing to do with each other. In other words, the parameters of who's considered to be a besula for the purposes of marrying a Kohen Gadol, and at what point do we assume that a woman has severed her ties with her late husband's estate, are two totally different issues. Because the issue of defining a besula for the purposes of a Kohen Gadol is really a technical machlokas about how to interpret this pasuk. According to Reb Meir, the starting point is that any girl who's even slightly a besula to any degree should have been kosher to marry the Kohen Gadol, but then the Torah goes out of its way to say that has to be besuleha, meaning to say that she has to be a full virgin, but there is a slight limitation on that, which is that the only type of intercourse that invalidates her is vaginal, but if she only engages in anal intercourse, then the assumption is, according to Reb Meir at least, that she can still marry the Kohen Gadol. But according to Rabbi Elazar and Reb Shimon, so they say that the starting point is the opposite. Starting point is that a girl has to be 100% of a virgin in order to marry the Kohen Gadol, which would have otherwise disqualified a bogeres. The chiddush of the pasuk of besuleha means that even if she's a partial besula, meaning to say, even if she's a bogeres, that's good enough. However, there's a chumrah on the other end, which is that according to Reb Shimon, if the girl engaged in anal intercourse, that will disqualify her from marrying a Kohen Gadol. So again, this is just a technical machlokas about how to interpret a pasuk regarding the definition of a besula for marrying a Kohen Gadol. Okay, the Gemara says, Hahi itza the tafsa kasa de chaspa bichsubasa katava mizone. There was a woman whose husband had died, and she wanted to collect her ksuba from the late husband's estate. So she goes ahead and she grabs or she seizes this silver cup. And now, after grabbing that cup, which is supposed to be in compensation or at least partial compensation for her ksuba, she goes and turns around to the yorshim and says, I also want to be supported. I also want my mizonos. So the argument was, well, you know, you've already grabbed compensation for your ksuba, so now you should be cut off. from getting any more mizonos. So the Gemara says, "Asayla kamei derava amar lehu liyas me zilu havula mizonos leis dechash lahadu Reb Shimon d'amar lo amrina miktas kesef kechol kesef." So Rava said, "You have to continue to support her. Why? Because we do not accept this position of Reb Shimon. We assume, not like Reb Shimon, that just because part of her ksuba has been paid up, that doesn't mean anything. She's still entitled to mizonos once her entire ksuba has been paid for. So now she's cut off from the estate. But because only part of the ksuba has been paid up, she's still entitled to mizonos." Okay, then the Gemara says, "Shalach li Rabba berei derava leRav Yosef mocheres shalom bevez din tzricha shvua o ein tzricha shvua." So now the Gemara raises the following question: the woman goes ahead and sells her ksuba outside of Bezdin. She does a private sale. She sells her ksuba. She says, "In the event that I become widowed or divorced, I'm selling the rights of my ksuba to you." So the question is, when she's now trying to collect that ksuba, in the event that she or the person who bought it is trying to collect, is there a shvua required to say that you're only entitled to X amount and not more? So the Gemara says, "V'sibay l'cha achraza." Why are we asking about whether a shvua is required to collect the amount that was supposedly guaranteed to her in the ksuba? Why don't we ask a more general question, which is whether there's a need for hachraza? Hachraza refers to this announcement, right? Because the assumption is that if the woman, let's say, self-evaluated whatever she was entitled to, so the question is, how do we know that that's actually what she's entitled to based on the ksuba? Well, in other words, the question is, why are we only asking about whether a shvua is required? We should have asked, why don't we insist on this public announcement that says that the woman is entitled to X amount of money? So the Gemara says, no. Amar le hachraza lo kami bayali. The Amar Reb Zeira, Amar Reb Nachman, almana sheshama la'atzma lo asta velo klum. The Gemara says, no. That there was no reason for the Gemara to ask about that idea, that there has to be a public proclamation that you have to go bring in these evaluators or these assessors to figure out how much she's entitled to, because that's obvious. Why is that obvious? Because if a woman, let's say a widow, tries to self-assess how much she's entitled to, she says, you know, I'm entitled to X amount of land, and land is worth this amount of money, so the Gemara says, we just ignore her. We don't put any stock in her own evaluation. So the Gemara clarifies, "Hei chidami, ida achruz amai lo asta v'lo klum." So if there was a proclamation and there were evaluators and people came and they assessed the value of the land, so then why would her own self-assessment be meaningless? So the Gemara says, "El alav de lo achrus uli atzmuhu de lo asta v'lo klum hali acher masha asta." The Gemara says it must therefore be that there was a proclamation, there was a public evaluation there was no public evaluation that happened. She just self-assessed the land. The only time, however, that self-assessment is meaningless, says the Gemara, is when she's doing it for herself. But here, remember, she sold her ksuba to somebody else, so she's claiming that she would have been entitled to however much, to $100,000 worth of land, and now she's claiming that I sold that right to this other guy, so he should be entitled to that. So the Gemara says, doesn't that mean that when she's claiming a self-assessed value of what she would have been entitled to, but now she's saying I sold it to some other guy, that what she did is actually valid, that her own self-assessment should be believed? So the Gemara says, no. La'olam da'achruz u'da'amri la'man shamlich. So the Gemara says, no. The case really was that there was a proclamation. I mean, there was, you know, there were public evaluators who came to assess the value of the land, but the thing is that we turn around to the woman and say, who made you into an evaluator? In other words, how do we know that your evaluation, that your assessment is correct, is fair, and therefore anything that she says, we could just ignore? Ki hayda hu gavra da afkidu gabe kista diasme. There was a person where they had deposited some sort of coral or some sort of gems or whatever it was that the Yisomim had. They were deposited by this guy. So azal shama linashe ba'arba mea zuze iyakar kam b'shis mea. So there was basically the value of the coral or the gems or whatever it was, they were initially appraised at or the almana, who was now claiming that she was entitled to this from the estate, she claimed that it was worth 400 zuz, and then there was and then the value of the coral went up to 600. So asala kamei de Rabbi Ami amar le man shamlach. So they came to Rabbi Ami and they said, who made you into an appraiser? Who made you into the evaluator that we should accept your assessment? And the Gemara concludes, vehilchas atzricha shvua ve'ein atzricha hachraza. We paskin lahalacha that in these types of scenarios, a shvua is required. The woman is obligated to swear to say that this is what she was entitled to. However, there is no public proclamation that's necessary, meaning to say you don't need to bring in the evaluators or the appraisers if she's saying this is what it's worth for somebody else. Once she sold off the rice to her ksuba to someone else, we no longer need to bring in the appraisers to verify that that's what the value is. Okay, says the Mishnah.
Rabbi, yeah. Is it a fact that if we determine that till a widow can collect a ksuba, she's entitled to sustenance from the Yisomim?
Yeah,
so if
for
that's
sure.
The case, Unless the widow really has a reason or has a gigantic...
Yeah, she should stay with the Yesomim forever. You're right. Yeah. So the Gemara earlier actually discussed this, and according to at least some positions in the Gemara, the Yesomim in certain cases have the right to cut her off and basically forcibly pay her ksuba because of that issue. Exactly. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Almana sha'isa ksuvasa masayim, u'michra shove mana b'masayim, or shove masaya b'mana, niskabla ksuvasa. So the Mishnah says the following. You have a woman who's widowed. Her ksuva is worth 200 zuz, let's say. And she goes ahead and she sells land that was worth 100 for 200, or vice versa. Land that was 200 for 100. So at that point, her ksuva has been paid up. In other words, even if she sold her land at a discounted price, she didn't get the full value, but if the land theoretically would have been worth 200 had she found the right guy to sell it, or let's say the land, she actually got 200 out of it, even though it was only worth 100, she actually doubled her money on what the land should have been worth. So at that point, her ksuba was paid up, meaning to say she no longer has a connection to the husband's estate or to the yesomim. Ha'isa ksuvasa mana u'michra shove mana v'dinar b'mana michra batel. However, the Mishnah says, let's say her ksuva was only 100. Let's say when she originally got married, she was only an almana, so her initial ksuba was only 100, and then she goes ahead and she sells land that's really worth 101, but she sells that 101 zuz or dinar land for only 100, so that sale is null and void. The entire sale is nullified. Afilu hi omeres achzer dinar liyorshin michra batel. Even if she says, I'll compensate the yorshin for the loss of that one zuz, that one dinar, the sale is still nullified because she has no right to sell something that's worth more than what she was entitled to, because she was only entitled to 100. She sold land that was worth 101 and she got gypped on it and she only got 100 out of it. So the Mishnah says in that scenario, even if she claimed that she was going to, you know, compensate for that one zuz, the entire sale is nullified. However, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer liola michra kayim anche tehisham kedeisha teshayir besada bas teshakavin uvegina bas chatzikav uchedivri Rabbi Akiva base rova. However, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees and says that the sale is 100% valid, provided that there's a certain amount that's remaining at the end of the sale. So let's say, for example, you still have 9 kav left in a field. As we showed and point out, that's considered to be enough land that's still workable. That's the minimum amount of land that you could actually get something productive out of. Or there's still a half a kav left in your garden, or according to Rabbi Akiva, at least a quarter kav left in the garden. So in these types of scenarios, so then according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the sale would still be valid. And then the Mishnah says, "Ha'isak suvasa arba meozuz umichra lazeb mana v'la zeb mana v'la acharon yafem mana v'dinar b'mana shel acharon batel v'shel kulan michron kayim." Then let's say her ksuba was worth 400 zuz. And then she goes ahead and she sells various plots of land. She sells to one guy for 100, to another guy for 100, and then to a third guy, she sells land that's worth 101, but she only sells it for 100. So the Mishnah says that last sale is nullified because, again, she went overboard. She went beyond what she was entitled to. But the first two sales, which were for 100, that was, in other words, that she was entitled to those amounts, those sales are going to be valid. Okay, so asks the Gemara.
So what's our concern here? Tipping the Urchim out of the extra money?
Exactly. Exactly right.
But
that's, yeah.
But she said she'd compensate them.
So we're gonna explain these opinions in the Gemara, but at least according to the Tanakhama, so he says the fact that she's gonna compensate doesn't matter because she was never entitled to sell them in the first place because she went overboard. She sold too much. So again, we'll see in the Gemara in a second. We're gonna analyze these two positions. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Maishna shove masayim b'mane to amrila atav sadit shove mane b'masayim nami tema ana arvachma. So the Gemara basically just wants to know, well, what's the difference between these two cases? Meaning, what's the difference in a case where the land was worth 200 and she only sold it for 100, where the Yorshim can say to her, listen, you caused us a loss, right? You sold the land for less than, for half of what it was worth. Why can't we turn around and say the same in the reverse? In other words, if the land was really only worth 100 and she sold it for 200, so let her profit from that. So the Gemara says, no, Amar of Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua, Kan Shana Rebbe, Hakol Leval Hamos, Kedesanya, Hosifu Lo Achas Yesera, Hakol Shaliach Divri Rebbe Huda, Rebbe Yossi Omer Cholken. So comes the Gemara and says that everything in this scenario belongs to what's called the Baal Hamos. The Baal Hamos is basically the owner, right, or the Mishaleach, the owner of the money. And now, so the Gemara says that there's a machlokes between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi about the following scenario. Let's say a person appointed a Shaliach for something. He sent the Shaliach to buy something for him, to sell something for him, whatever it was. And because of the shliach, you ended up profiting. The shliach got you a great deal, or the shliach, sold it for more than what it was worth, whatever the case may be. So the question is, who gets that extra money? So according to Reb Yehuda, he says all the profit, anything above and beyond what you were expecting, goes to the shliach. But according to Reb Yossi, you're supposed to divide the difference. So if he got you an extra 100, whatever, so then you divide that between you and the shliach according to Reb Yossi. So asks the Gemara, the Hasanya Reb Yossi Omer HaKol Leval Hamos. Didn't Reb Yossi say that all the profit goes to the original owner, not to the shliach, and not dividing it? So the Gemara says, no. Omer Rabbi Bar Chama Lo Kashya, Kan Bedavar Sheyesh Lo Kitzvah, Kan Bedavar Sheein Lo Kitzvah. It depends if we're dealing with something that has a fixed value or not. If the item that we're dealing with has a fixed value, for example, let's say karka. Karka in halacha typically has a set value, so then in that scenario, we assume that the value is going to be split. But if it's something which is where the value fluctuates, so then we assume that everything goes back to the original owner. Amar of Papa, Hilchasa Davar Sheyesh Lo Kitzvah Cholkin, Davar Sheein Lo Kitzvah HaKol Leval Hamos. Comes to Papa and says, we paskin that if it's a type of an item that has a fixed amount like karka, so then any profit that you got above and beyond what you were expecting, you divide between yourself and the shliach. But if it's an item that does not have a fixed value like metalin, so then everything goes back to the original. In other words, any profit that the shliach brings in more than what was anticipated goes back to the original owner. So asks the Gemara, my kamash malon, shinuya de shanina shinuya. You see from this Gemara that the answer the Gemara just provided before, the answer of Rami Bar Chama, that distinction between something with a fixed value versus not a fixed value is in fact an accurate answer. Okay, so the Gemara says, Yiboyaluhu. Amar le, zavin li lischa, va'azal vizavin le kora mai. Mosif al dvaravu v'lischa miyakane, odilma mavir al dvaravu v'lischa nami lokane. Gemara has almost like a technical question about the following case. I appoint someone as a shaliach to go sell a certain portion of my land, but I only wanted to sell what's called a lischa. A lischa is a half a core, and the shaliach goes ahead and he sells the full core of it. So he sells double what I wanted him to sell. So the question basically is, did the shaliach basically do what I wanted, but a little bit extra? So he basically fulfilled his shlichas, but there was a little bit tacked on? Or no, do we say that he totally violated what I wanted him to do? I wanted him to do X, and doing 2X is not what I wanted. I only wanted X. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yaakov min harpkod mishmei deravina, tashma. Amar bala bayis l'shlucho, tein lohen chasicha lo'orchen, v'hu omer telushtayim, v'hei not lushalosh, kulan ma'alu. So the Gemara quotes this sugya, this topic about the relationship between the mishalech and the shliach. It appears in a few places in Shas, but one of the places that appears primarily is a little bit more of an arcane place at the end of Maseches Me'ila. There's a whole discussion about this topic in reference to Me'ila. So we know, of course, that Me'ila means that if a person accidentally misappropriates something from Hekdesh, from the Beis HaMikdash, something which has Kedusha, they violate Me'ila, they have to bring a carbon, they have to pay a penalty, right? There's a whole psukim in the end of Parashas Vayikra about this topic. So the Gemara in Me'ila illustrates the following. Let's say I turn around to my shliach, and I have a bunch of guests over, and there are certain pieces of meat that I want to serve to the guests. I say to the shliach, do me a favor, and give the guests, give them one piece of meat, and then the shliach says to the guests, you can each take two, and the guests go ahead and they take three. And then it turns out that all three pieces of meat were actually, they were a karba, they were a chatas, they had kedusha, and you were not supposed to eat them. So the Gemara in Me'ila says, all three people, the balabais, the shliach, and the guests, all violate the yisur of Me'ila. So the Gemara explains, Iyamar Bishlama Mosef al Dvar of Haveh, Bishimachi Balabayas Ma. Ella Yaman Mavriel Dvarav Have, Balabayas Amai Ma. Vihasnan, Hashaliach Sha'asa Shlichuso, Balabayas Ma, Loasa Shlichuso, Shaliach Ma. The Gemara has a very simple calculation. The Gemara says, if you're going to argue that when a person goes above and beyond what you asked them to do, that basically is that, in other words, they basically did what you asked, but they went a little bit, above and beyond, that's basically still considered fulfilling your Shlichas, so then I understand why the Balabayas violates Me'ila, because the Shliach did what he wanted, he just went a little bit extra. So everyone violates Me'ila in this scenario. However, that's not true. What do you mean? Why? What can? That's a different issue. No, the question of Ein Shliach Dvar Avera is different, because here the whole, as you pointed out before, the entire basis of Me'ila is that it's Beshogeg, right? You don't know that you're doing the Isser in the first place, right? You can't purposely appoint him to do the Avera, bemaze it, but here he doesn't know what he's doing at all. So again, the Gemara says like this, that if you're going to argue that by going above and beyond, he's basically doing what you wanted, but a little bit extra, so that I understand why the Balabais would violate Me'ila in this scenario. But if you're going to tell me me that by going above and beyond what the Baal HaBayis asked, that he's actually breaking his shlichus, that he's actually violating the shlichus, so then why on earth is the Baal HaBayis violating Me'ilah? The Mishnah in Me'ilah says that the only time that the Mishaleach or the Baal HaBayis violates Me'ilah is if the shliach actually carried out his shlichus correctly. The shliach violated the shlichus and as a result violates Me'ilah, that's not on the Baal HaBayis, that's not his fault. So the Gemara says, no. Hacha b'mayaskidon to amar lehu tulu achas midaito shel Baal HaBayis v'achas midaiti v'shaklu inhu tlas. The Gemara says the case is as follows. When the shaliach goes to the guests and says, take the meat, he was very, very specific about it. He said, one piece of meat you could take on the account of the Baal HaBayis. In other words, the Baal HaBayis said you could take one. Then the second piece you could take on my cheshbon, on my account. And then they turned around and they took three. So everyone, in other words, basically no one listened to anyone. Everyone violated everything because of this particular scenario, because of the way that the statement was formulated. That's why there's a violation of Me'ilah. But had the statement not been formulated this way, had the shaliach given the guests the impression that the two pieces of meat could be taken simply because the Baal HaBayis said so, and not because the shaliach said one could be on my account, so then the Gemara says, in a Hanami, then the Baal HaBayis would not have violated Me'ilah. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tashma, Ha'isa k'suvasa mana, u'michra shave mana v'dinar b'mana, michra batel. So again, this goes back to the case of the Mishnah. The woman had a k'suva that was worth 100. Then she sells a plot of land that's worth 101, but she only gets 100 out of it, so at least according to the Tanakhama in the Mishnah, the entire sale is nullified because she had no right to sell that 101 piece of land because she wasn't entitled to that, and she's causing a loss to the Yorshim. So the Gemara asks, "My lav de zav and shavim mana v'dinar b'mana v'dinar umay b'mana mana shela umay afilu hi omeres achaziras adinar liyorshim." So the Gemara says, presumably the Mishnah means the following. In other words, the Mishnah means that she went ahead, she sells a plot of land that's worth 100, and she sells it for 101. And what does the Mishnah mean when it said for 100? That meant her 100, meaning, as we know from her Ksuma, she's entitled to 100. And when the Mishnah said, Afilu, even if she says, I'm going to return that extra dinar to the Yorshim, as we saw in the Mishnah, that's still problematic. And even though that dinar is built into karka, it's built into land, nonetheless, the sale is nullified. So the Gemara says no. Amar Ravuna Bereder Rav Nasan Lo Bida Ozil. We're talking about a scenario. We're talking about a scenario where the value of the land went down, where there was a decrease in the value. So the Gemara says, "Hang on a second, Hamid Seifa Bida Ozil Have Reisha Bida Lo Ozil." So if you're telling me that the latter case in the Mishnah is where the value of the land decreased, so then in the former case, presumably the value did not decrease. The Katani Seifa Haislek Suvasa Arba Meozuz Michro Laze Bemana Vila Zebemana Vila Acharon Yafem Mana Vidina Bemana Shal Acharon. I'm sorry, Vidina Bemana Shal Acharon Michro Batal Vishal. We said in the latter part of the Mishnah that the woman who was entitled to a ksuba of 400 zuz, she goes ahead and sells a plot of land of 100 to one person, of 100 to another person, and then a third plot of land that's worth 101, but she sells that plot of land only for 100, so the first two sales are valid, but the third one is nullified. So the Gemara says this case in the Mishnah is obviously talking about a case where the value went down because she lost the zuz, she lost the dinar on that last plot of land. So if the latter case is talking about a case where she sells the land for less than what it's worth, then presumably the ratio, the first case is talking about where she sells it for more. So the Gemara says, "Lo, Reisha v'Seifa b'de Ozel v'Seifa ha'kamash malan taima de Ozel b'diyasme avo b'dida mechra kayim." So the Gemara says, "No, that both cases in the Mishnah, both of the case of the scenarios in the Mishnah are talking about a case where she sold the land for less than what it was worth, and the chiddush of the latter case in the Mishnah where the ksuba was worth 400 zuz and she sells the last plot of land for less than what it was worth. The chiddush is that the only reason why that sale is invalid is because it's coming at the expense of the assomim, because the assomim are losing out a dinar on that sale, implying that if it was just on her own account, if she was just losing money because she had bad business acumen and she was losing money on her own cheshbon and it wasn't affecting the assomim at all, that sale would in fact be valid. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second, Hami Dereisha Shamat Mina. But we already know that if she sold the land and it was only on her own cheshbon that she lost that and it wasn't affecting the assomim, we already know that from the former case in the Mishnah that such a sale would be valid. Why? Because the Mishnah says, Haisa Ksuvasa Masayim Umichra Shavim Mana B'Masayim O Shavim Masayim B'Mana Neskav L'Ksuvasa. The Mishnah told us already that if the woman had a 200 zuz ksuva and she went ahead and sold land that was worth 200 for 100 or vice versa, meaning in one of those scenarios, she's losing half the value of the land, which is not affecting the yisomim, so then the halacha is that she's no longer entitled to her ksuva. She's collected her ksuva and she's no longer entitled to mizonos at that point. So the Gemara says, we already see from that case that once she's already sold something at less than the value and it's not affecting the yisomim at all, that sale is considered to be valid. So the Gemara says no. Mahu de sema hasam hu de istalka lemi haybesa legamre aval hacha nigzor mana rishon atu mana acharon kamash malan. One could have argued that in the case over there, so she's effectively removed herself. She's cut herself off from the estate of the late husband. But here, one could argue that we should impose a gzera on the first 100 zuz that she's entitled to because of the latter 100 zuz that she's trying to collect. So the chiddush is, you see, in both of these cases, even though she sells the land for less than its value, so as long as it doesn't affect the esomim, the sale is still going to be down. That's one version of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, V'ika da'amre, halo tibay lecha. Hecha da'amre le'zil zavin li lischa v'zavin le'kora, devadei mosif al dvarav havei, ki tibay lecha da'amre le'zil zavin li'kora v'azav v'zavin li'lischa mai. Now the Gemara, in the second version, goes back to what we were talking about in the previous da'av, and the Gemara now revamps everything. So now the Gemara says, if I tell the shliach to sell half a core of land and he sells the full core, everyone agrees in the second version that that's considered to be adding on to what I said. Meaning he basically did my shlichas, but he just went above and beyond. The question is, what if it's the reverse? What if I asked him to sell the full core and he only sold a half a core of land? So the Gemara explains, Mi amrinan amar le de tavalecha avdelecha de ilamet starchi lecha zuzei lo matzis hadras bay o dilma amar le lo nichali de lifshu shtare ilavai. So the question basically is as follows. On the one hand, the shliach can argue that I did you, the Baal Bayis, a favor by not selling the full plot of land, because what if the land went up in value? You know, you still have this land you could sell down the line. You know, if the price goes up, you can actually get more money out of it. On the other hand, the Baal Bayis can make the argument that I don't want more shtaros piling up. I wanted to sell all this land in one shot, so this way I would have one document associated with the sale. Now I have to sell it again. I have to get more shtaros, and having more shtaros is always problematic because maybe you'll lose them, maybe whatever. So because of that, the Baal Bayis can maybe argue that you actually violated my shlichus. So that was the Shaila in the Gemara according to the second version.